Morning. Today's daf in Baba Kama's Lamed Ches. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is Lozech Nishmas Liba Gavriela Bashmuel. We are in the Gemara today on Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph, towards the bottom of the Amud. We are finishing up the topic of establishment of a muad, and we're talking about limited muad, an animal that goes after, but the animal doesn't go after things indiscriminately, but there seems to be some sort of discrimination on the part of the animal of what it goes after. And so basically the discussion we're having in the course of the Gemara from yesterday's daf is going to be, at what point do we assume that the animal is discriminant in terms of what it's going to go after? And so we have a Mishnah. The Mishnah reads yesterday, and just to look back at the Mishnah, Shur Shu Mur Lamino V'Eino Mur L'Sheino Mino. So the Mishnah says that the animal is Muad, but only for attacking its own type, but it doesn't attack another type. And what we saw yesterday in the Gemara is Machlokes between Rav Zvid and Rav Papa in terms of the basic understanding of the Mishnah. Rav Zvid says that when the Mishnah says V'Eino Mino, you have to put a lot of emphasis on the Vav. V'Eino Mino. Right? And according to Rashi, the simple pshat of Razvid, is that what Razvid means is that we have to know that it discriminates. Meaning we don't assume that it discriminates, we have to know that it discriminates. And that means that the animal is only going to go after its own type, and we watch it pass after other animals, and we notice that it doesn't go after other animals. So there is no assumption that the animal discriminates. You have to know that the animal discriminates, and then and only then can we say that it's a limited muad. Rav Papa, on the other hand, says no. Then when you read the Mishnah, you take out the Vav, and the Mishnah reads, Shur Shuhu Mur, let me know. Ain't a Mur L'Shein, let me know. So once you see that it attacks only that of its own type, you can therefore assume that it's not going to attack animals of the other type. And of course, now, this makes a big difference between how you understand the Mishnah, whether you understand it like Rav Zvid or like Rav Papa. Because according to Rav Zvid, so once there is a, since there's no assumption of discrimination, once it attacks an animal, a certain type of animal, and we don't know otherwise, so we're going to have to assume that the animal is a muad for everything, and as a result of that, according to Rav Zvid, the owner of the animal is always going to have to pay Nezek Shalem. Whereas according to Rav Papa, no. When it attacks a certain animal, we can assume that it's going to attack only that animal, and for all other types of animals, this is unexpected, and therefore the owner of the animal only needs to pay Chatzi Nezek, not Nezek Shalom. So this is a machlokas that we saw yesterday between Rav Papa and Rav Zvid in terms of the basic understanding of the Mishnah. Then, as we went through the sugya yesterday, through Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph, so the Gemara quoted Mishnah and Brisos, and for the most part, they all seem to have supported the opinion of Rav Zvid. And the Gemara defended, and the Gemara went back and forth in terms of whether or not these Mishnayos do in fact support Rav Zvid or Rav Papa. Okay. We are towards the bottom of the Amud. We're three lines at the bottom?
Yes.
Okay. Let me just read V'imtim Salomar, the beginning of the third line from the bottom. Okay, V'imtim Salomar. Now, as I mentioned yesterday, the preponderance of evidence of the Gemara seems to be that we're going to support Rav Zvid, meaning that we quote a Mishnah and Brisos, and all of them seem to suggest that in order to know that an animal discriminates, you cannot guess, you cannot assume, but you have to know. Meaning you have to see the animal both attack its type and not attack its a different type. So the Gemara says, V'imtim Salomar Nami Isal Rav Papa. The Gemara says at the very bottom, and let's assume that the halacha falls like Rav Papa. Meaning, despite the fact that there is a preponderance of evidence supporting the position of Zvid, the Gemara at the bottom acknowledges, but really the halacha is going to fall like that of Rav Papa. So that means that if an animal attacks only its own type, even if we don't know otherwise, we can assume that the animal is going to discriminate. But let's say, says the Gemara, even according to Rav Papa, which the halacha follows, Nagashur Chamor V'Gamal Nasemur L'Kol. Let's say the animal went on the attack and it attacked an ox and a donkey and a camel. So in other words, it attacked three different types of animals. So then Mur L'Kol. So then we know now that the animal does not discriminate, as it attacked basically anything that it saw, any type of animal that it saw, even according to Rav Papa, we now assume that the animal is muad lakol. It is going to, the owner should have expected it to have attacked any different type of animal, and therefore the owner is obligated nezek shalem. Tanu Rabbanan. Rashi or Nagach Shor, say, Rashi or Nagach, Shor lo Nagach, Shor Nagach, Shor lo Nagach, Shor Nagach, Shor lo Nagach. From here until the end of the sugya, coming up on the Amud Beis, what the Gemara is going to now investigate is patterns. We know that in order to, for an animal to become a mord, so it had to have attacked three times. What if the three times comes in patterns? So basically, here's what we're doing this for the rest of the sugya, and we're going to try to find patterns. So it sees an animal attack, sees the second animal does not attack, third animal attacks, fourth animal doesn't attack, fifth animal attacks, sixth animal does not attack. Muad l'sirugin l'shvarim. So here now, we're going to have a very specific muad. It's going to be a muad for shvarim, because it's attacking other oxen, and also alternative, right? Every other oxen it's going to attack. So only on the odds and not on, in this particular pattern, only on the odds, not on the evens. So if it happens to be, now again, I don't know who's monitoring and who's keeping score, but if it happens to be, let's say it attacked the eighth animal, so that's not on the pattern. So therefore, he only has to pay chatzi nezek. If he attacks the ninth animal, well, that's on the pattern. And that was expected. And therefore, he has to pay nezek shalom. Tana Rabbanan. Ra'ashur nagach chamur lo nagach. Sus nagach gamal lo nagach. Parod nagach arod lo nagach. Nasimur l'sirugin. Lakom. So here, again, it's going to alternate. Attack, not attack. Attack, not attack. So every odd animal he's attacking, every even animal he's not attacking. But he's showing no discrimination in terms of what he's about to attack. So now, here the pattern is that the animal is a muad, but on alternate animals. But it is because the animal is attacking everything, so it's an indiscriminate muad in terms of type of animal. However, it's only muad on the odd numbers, not on the even numbers. Ibailahu. The Gemara now asks a series of questions, which a number of them are not going to get answered. We now turn to the top of Lam Zayin Amud Beis. Nagach. Shor, shor, vishor, chamur v'gamal. So the animal went on the attack, and the animal attacked an ox, an ox, an ox, a donkey, and a camel. Now, if you'll notice this pattern over here, there are five animals involved. Now, you can basically circle two groupings. You could circle the first three, which is sure, 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 which means now that we have a muad, but for shvarim. Or if you'd like, you could circle the last three, sure, chamor, v'gamal. Now that shows an indiscriminate, no discrimination on the part of the animal. And so basically now the question is as follows. When you see this pattern, so what are you circling? The first three? The last three. Mahu. Haishur basar shvarim shadinle. Are we going to take the third shore and put it together with the first two? And vakatu the shvarim hudiyai, lamidi achrina lawiyai. Which means that yes, the animal's a muad, but it discriminates. It only goes after oxen. It doesn't go after other types. Odilma haishur basra basar chamor vagamal shadinle. Viyai le lakule mine. So, or the other possibility is to take the third shor and put it with the animals four and five, the donkey and the camel, and now we have an animal goring and it does not discriminate. And three times down it does not discriminate. So that's a question. Well, the Gemara moves on to the next question. Now the Gemara is going to keep doing this. The Gemara is going to keep moving on to the next question, because as we're going to see as we get to the end of the discussion, the Gemara is not going to resolve these issues. Yes.
So then this qualifying type classification should happen because it's already attacked three times.
Correct. It's going to attack three times, but by only focusing on the first three, so yes, the animal has established to be a muad, but it discriminates. As opposed to if I looked at three, four, and five, so then I can say that not only is it a muad, but a muad that does not discriminate. So it makes a difference in terms of whether we're focusing on the first three and the last three. And that's the Gemara's question. Chamor v'gamal, shor, shor, v'shor. It's going to be the same thing, it's just that we're going to be reversing. The pattern over here is donkey, camel, followed then by three different shvarim. Mahu. So the Gemara asks the question, hai shor, kama basar, chamor v'gamal, shadinle, v'yayle l'kula mine. So again, it's the same question, it's just that we just inverted. So are we going to say now that third... that the shor is going to be put together with the first two, which means three distinct animals, and that means that the animal, this animal, does not discriminate. And then, but we could also say that the shor belongs to the other two, which means that yes, it's a muad, but a discriminating muad. It only is going after shvarim. Next question. Shabbos, v'shabbos, echad b'shabbos v'sheni b'shabbos. Here's another pattern. It attacked on a Shabbos. It attacked the next Shabbos. It attacked the third Shabbos. So now we have a pattern. But then after the third Shabbos, it then attacked on Sunday and on Monday, following the third Shabbos. So now, mahu ha Shabbos basraisa basra Shabbos u deshadidin le v'akat le Shabbos u diayid liyamos achol ho liayid. And so once again, in this pattern, if we take the third Shabbos and couple it with the first two Shabbosim, so yes, the animal is a muad, but it is only a muad for Shabbos, like we discussed in yesterday's daf, where you can have that, an animal which only goes on the attack on Shabbos. Remember Rashi and Tosfos? Rashi said because on Shabbos it's not working, it doesn't know what to do with itself, okay, so therefore it'll attack people. Or according to Tosfos, he quotes the Yerushalmi, who says that because people dress differently on Shabbos, they look Shabbos-dick, so the animal does not recognize its owner, and so therefore it attacks it. Either way, over here, if we take the third Shabbos and pair it with the first two, yes, the animal is a muad, but only for Shabbos. On the other hand, if we take the third Shabbos and pair it up with the following Sunday and Monday, now we have the animal being a muad and does not discriminate in terms of day of the week. So again, it's really the same question. So we don't know what to do with that middle. Do we pair it with the first two or the last two? And again, there's pluses and minuses in doing so. Hey, v'shabbos, v'er, v'shabbos, 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 v'shabbos. It's the same question, we're just reversing. It's now Thursday, Friday, Shabbos. The animal attacked 3 days in a row. And then the second Shabbos, and then the third Shabbos. So once again, mahu. Ha Shabbos, kamay sabasar, hey, v'shabbos, v'er, v'shabbos, shadin alei, v'yai, l'kula yomei. So do we take that first Shabbos and pair it with Thursday and Friday, having this animal being a muad for every single day? Odimah, ha Shabbos, kamay sabasar, shabbosos, hu d'shadin alei, ulu shabbosos, hu d'iyai. Or maybe no. You take that first Shabbos, and even though it came after a Thursday and Friday attack, you take the first Shabbos, you couple it with the second Shabbos and the third Shabbos, and now you have the animal being a muad, but only being a muad for Shabbos and not for every day. On these questions, the Gemara, and when I say these, I mean all these questions of patterns and what to do with a two possible patterns existing, and which one do we focus on? Take with the Gemara leaves these questions unresolved.
Before you get to the second Shabbos, there was a Thursday and a Friday before that.
Right.
And the Shur didn't, there was no
Nekircha. Right.
So you see that the Thursday, Friday really had nothing to do with it.
Right, but remember, in order to rehabilitate, in order to get the animal back to ground zero, so you need three times in order not to do that. Okay. Take with the Gemara leaves these questions unresolved. Nagach shur yom tezvav b'chodesh zev, yom tezayin b'chodesh zev, yom yuzayin b'chodesh zev. Now, I was wondering this Gemara was already prepared a number of days ago, but I was wondering at what point in time we were going to take this entire discussion and compare it to Vestos. We know that a woman has a cycle, and if the cycle is predictable, so then that's what's called the Veskavua. And that affects a number of halachas regarding Nida. The first parak discusses this at length. And so, basically, when we're looking at patterns, so it's a pattern regarding an animal attacking, but there are other areas in halacha where there are patterns, and specifically by Nida. So, I just was wondering when the Gemara was going to make the link, and it's right here, it's right now. An animal attacks on the 15th of 1 month, the 16th of the second month, and the 17th of the third month. So clearly the animal now is showing a pattern. The animal is in touch with Rosh Chodesh, and why not? Meaning it's a physical phenomenon, it's a physical reality, and so the animal knows about the moon. And again, for whatever reason, hardwired in this animal is that it attacks every month, but just it moves ahead one day every month. So now plukta d'Rav Shmuel. So it's definitely a pattern. The only issue is it a pattern on the third time, or do we need to wait on the fourth time? Basically, do we look at the dates or do we look at the intervals in between the dates? So de'itmar, and this is a machlokus in the Gemara Nida regarding a woman and the establishment of her having a vest kavua, a fixed cycle. De'itmar rasa yom tezva b'chorzev, yom tezayim b'chorzev, yom yizayim b'chorzev, rav amar kava la vest. So according to Rav, 15th of one, first month, 16th of second month, 17th of the third month, that's it. She now has a fixed cycle. And with an expectation in the next month that she's going to see on the 18th. And that expectation is going to affect the number of halachas regarding Hilchos Nida. I'm not going to go through it right now, but it affects the number of halachas. But according to Rav, that's it. The fix is in. I mean that here literally. Ushmul amar ad shetishalish bedilog. And Shmuel says, no. You have to look at the interval, not the dates. So in other words, in order to create a vest kavua here, 15th to 16th, that's one interval. 16th to 17th, that's a second interval. And now I need to go 17th to 18th, then I'll have a third interval. So not looking at the dates, we're looking at the intervals. And so, the Gemara says, same thing regarding our animal that is also establishing a pattern. It would be the same machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. Just as an interesting aside in terms of halacha, I just say this off the top of my head, but I'm sure this is not. I'm sure I'm not the first one who thought of this. I just, as an interesting point, when we pass in the halacha, when it comes to mamonos, we follow Shmuel, and when it comes to isurim, we follow Rav. Now it's interesting. We're talking about patterns in Nida. That's obviously regarding isurim. So I would speculate, but I'm speculating though, I'm not saying this. I would speculate then that the halacha by Nida would follow like Rav. And meanwhile, when it comes to Baba Kama and Ezekin and money, so then the halacha would follow like Shmuel. So it's kind of, then it would be strange. Meaning then we'd be talking about the establishment of patterns, which is one idea, and then we're having a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel that affect both Isurim and Mamonos. And then it would be confusing which way to paskin. Back to the Gemara. Amar Rav Hashemah kol shofar v'nagach, kol shofar v'nagach, kol shofar v'nagach. Let's say every time you blow the horn, the animal attacks. So you have now a Pavlovian ox who attacks after every blowing of the horn. Now semu'ad l'shofar, so the Gemara says that the animal now becomes the mu'ad towards the sound of the horn because it attacked after three horn blasts. Pshita the Gemara says, now I don't know why this is presented. It seems to be pretty obvious. The Gemara says, maybe the first horn blast is not a reaction to the horn blast. It's just simply an instinctive, almost reflexive reaction to a noise, to a sound. And so maybe that shouldn't be counted as one. That's a havamina, but the maskana is no. We're going to count that as one. Okay. We start the Mishnah now. We're on Lam Zayin Amud Beis, and we're starting the Mishnah really today's daf for today's sugya. And it's not controversial because there's not going to be any controversy over here. Well, actually, that's not true. Regarding Hekdesh, there is going to be controversy. But the halacha of a shor shel Yisrael damaging a shor shel Nachri, so if you're familiar with the halacha already, you'll realize that our Mishnah can be a little contentious. But let's see the Mishnah inside, and the Gemara's discussion is going to be fascinating. Shor shel Yisrael shel Nachri, shor shel Hekdesh. So first of all, we are going to be discussing the Mishnah. What if a shor shel Yisrael already damages shor shel Hekdesh? Now, this should sound familiar because we discussed this a long time ago in Baba Kama. Approximately a month ago in the Sechta, we already had a Mishnah that discussed that in order to have liability, it has to be my shor damaging someone else's shor. But if it's a shor that belongs to Hekdesh, then there is no liability. And conversely, this, the opposite is also true. If the animal of Hekdesh attacks one of mine, so there's not going to be a liability. Now, we've heard this already earlier in the Sechta, but earlier, and it was in the first parak, we only alluded to the halacha. Here, the Mishnah speaks it out straight out. And that is shor shel Yisrael shenagach shor shel Hekdesh shel Hekdesh shenagach shor shel Hayot pater shenemar shor re'ehu v'lo shor shel Hekdesh. In terms of the halacha, exemption in both directions. Why? Gzeiras hakasuv, because the Torah says
it's not his animal.
It's not his. What do you mean his?
If an animal is Hekdesh, it's not his animal.
No, but in other words, but it belongs to Hekdesh.
That's God. God's the owner.
Well, I mean, God's the owner, but he also has accountants, and he has, in other words, there's a treasurer, and someone's keeping the books. It's a corporation. In other words, you might have thought, without the drushing, you might have thought, I got to pay Hekdesh. I got to reimburse Hekdesh for the damage and for the loss. Okay, and Xeris Akasov, and it's a drush in the Torah that tells us no, that you're going to be exempt. Shur she Yisrael shenagel shur shel Kanani. If shur she Yisrael damages shur Kanani, pater. So an exemption. Vishal Kanani shenagel shur she Yisrael. And conversely, if a shur Kanani damages a shur she Yisrael, being tam beimur mishal nezik shalem. So here the halacha is full restitution, full reimbursement, even if their animal that damaged was that of a tam. Okay. See the contentiousness that it could exist in the Mishnah? Stay tuned. We're going to discuss much more in the Gemara. First, we're going to go to the first halacha in the Mishnah, and that is Shur Shel Hekdesh. Shur Shel Hekdesh is patur, says the Mishnah, in both directions. If my animal were to damage Shur Shel Hekdesh, I'm exempt. If a Shur Shel Hekdesh were to damage my animal, Beis HaMikdash is exempt. So now, Masitzin Deloker Rabbi Shimon Manasya Detanya. The Gemara notes that our Mishnah is not reflecting the opinion of Rabbi Shimon Manasya. The Gemara quotes a brisa. Shur shel hekdesh shenagel shur shel hekdesh shel hekdesh shenagel shur shel hekdesh patur shenemar shur re'eh v'lo shur shel hekdesh. So in the Tanakhama of the brisa, it is echoing the sentiment of our Mishnah. But we're quoting the brisa because of the second opinion. Rabbi Shimon Manasya omer shur shel... Rabbi Shimon Manasya omer shur shel hekdesh shenagel shur shel hekdesh patur. Now, if their ox, meaning Hektish's ox, were to damage my ox, so then yes, says Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh, exemption. However, v'shel hedger shenagach shur shel hektish being tam beimur and mishal nezik shalem. However, if my ox were to gore the ox of a hektish ox, so then I would have to pay full damages, and even if my ox were a tam, I'd have to pay full damages. That is the opinion of Shimon Manasya. The Gemara says we need understanding. And the Gemara says, Amri, my kasav Rabbi Shimon. What is his position? Meaning, if it's based on the drasha is re'ehu, which means that the only time that there is liability is only when my ox scores someone else's ox. V'ireo lab dafka. Now, if re'e was not to be taken literally, so then afilo dehektish namikinagach dehejo lechayev. So then that means then that there should be, the rule should be the same regarding my ox damaging hektish's ox and vice versa. V'chitim alolam kitzav re'eo dafka. So the Gemara says, well, maybe re'e was to be taken literally, and that the only time that there's liability is only when my ox scores somebody else's ox. So miu dehejo kinag dehektesh hainu time de mechayv mishum de kamaisile mikava chomer dehejot. And the Gemara says, and maybe what's behind the opinion of Rabbi Shimon is that it's based on a kal v'chomer. Now this is interesting because generally speaking, we say ein onshin min adin. You don't punish somebody based on a kal v'chomer. And so, I didn't see anyone discuss this, and I'd be curious. Maybe over here, it's not a punishment as much as it is a reimbursement, a restitution. Maybe onish means something more like corporal punishment, but not a financial liability, perhaps. Anyway, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that this is a kal v'chomer. Uma hejer shenagach shel hejer chayev, ki nagach dehektish lo kol shekein demechayev. So the Gemara says, and the kal v'chomer is actually very simple. My animal damages your ox. I'm liable. My animal damages Hektish's ox, meaning that's holy. It belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you don't think I'm for sure going to be liable? Now the Gemara says, okay, that's a kal v'chomer, but da'il avam en adin lios kenadon. Ma lahalan tam chati nezek, hachanami chati nezek. But here, once again, we get to reacquaint ourselves with the principle of Dayo. Is that when I'm extending a halacha through a kal v'chomer, I cannot go to the source greater than that when I... Sorry. I can't go to the result greater than which I came from the source. If the source is my tam animal doing damage to my friend's chatzi nezek, well, if my tam animal is doing damage to the hektesh, it should also only be chatzi nezek. And meanwhile, according to Rabbi Shimon, you're going to be paying full nezek even when it's a tam. So even if it's a kal v'chomer, the rules of Dayo should limit the extension of the halacha. Elam Reish Lakish. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're going to go about it in a different route. And that is the following. Hakol ayu b'chlal nezek shalem. Truth be told, says Rava, Reish Lakish, is that when my animal damages another animal, really, what should I do? I should pay full damages. Meaning, I know we discussed this already in the Masechta, but this idea that my animal, it was unexpected, therefore I only have to pay chatzi nezek. And yes, we discussed earlier whether it's kanas or whether it's mamon. But really, principally, fundamentally, says Reish Lakish, you should be paying nezek shalem. And now, so that's the default. The default is I should always be paying full damages for whatever my animal does. Kishapar lacha kasav re'ehu. Now the Torah does say the word re'ehu, which means that when my animal damages my friend's animal, now and that obviously excludes the Beis HaMikdash. Where is re'ehu found in the Torah? The Gemara notes gabe tam re'ehu hu. If you'll know carefully, the word re'ehu is found in the parsha specifically by tam that does damage, and that means who. The tam mishalem chatzei nezek mechlal dehekdesh bein tam bein mor mishalem nezek shalem. And what the Torah is doing is, it's actually taking us away from the default. The default is I should be making full restitution. Re'ehu was telling me that when my animal damages my friend's animal, so then I don't need to make full restitution. I only need to pay half damages. But you see, what the Re'ehu is coming to do is just take the case of my animal damaging my friend's animal and moving it away from the default, which is full restitution. Since the default is full restitution, so when my animal damages Hektish's animal, I go back to the default, which is I have to make full restitution. The im kain nichtav kra lahai re'ehu gabe mua. And the Gemara just simply punctuates the point on the top of Lamed Chesem and Aleph. You see, if what Re'ehu was doing was coming to exclude Hekdesh, so the placement of Re'ehu should not have been placed by Tam, should have been placed by Muad. The fact that it was placed by Tam is telling me that specifically when my Tam animal damages my friend, I'm going to move away from the default, which is full restitution, and only pay Chatzi Nezik. But that's only regarding Re'ehu, not when it comes to Hekdesh. That is Reish Lakish's explanation of the Halacha, according to Rabbi Shimon Manasseh. But again, our Mishnah and the Tanakhama of our, meaning there's only one opinion in our Mishnah, and the Tanakhama of the Braisa disagree with Rabbi Shimon Manasseh. They understand that when it comes to damages between my animal and Hekdesh's, or Hekdesh's and my animal, Pata Lagamre, a full exemption. No, Reish Lakish is just providing a understanding of Rav Shimon Manasseh. Not necessarily supporting it, not necessarily saying it's the halacha, just simply giving a way for us to understand his position. Top of Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, the Gemara discusses the second halacha of our Mishnah. Obviously the one that could become contentious. Shur Shoy Yisor Shanagach Shur Shoy Kanani Pater Amrei Mima Nafshach. So, in the yeshiva, when they were discussing this Mishnah, they said, it's just, we don't understand. Meaning, if the Torah, by the word re'eh, was coming to tell me that the only time there's going to be liability is when my animal damages the animal of another Jew, so then there should be a full exclusion of a non-Jew in both directions. V'ireh lav davka. And if Re'ehu is not to be taken literally, and Re'ehu just simply means a friend, but not necessarily they're referring to a Jew, so then there should be liability in both directions, both in the direction of my animal damaging a Kanani's animal, and a Kanani's animal damaging my animal. So in the yeshiva, all they're trying to do is just understand, it seems to be inconsistent. And obviously it's working in our favor, which is the reason why it could turn a little bit contentious. So, Amar Rabbi Abba Amakra. So, the Gemara over here is going to give two explanations, very similar to one another. A little subtle difference between the two. But basically the Gemara says, here's how to understand it. Amor v'yamodet eretz ra'av v'yater goyim. The Gemara quotes a pasuk. Pasuk is from Chavakuk, from Treyasar. And the pasuk speaks to the idea that a Kadosh Baruch Hu looked and saw the nation, v'yater goyim, and then he permitted. What does that mean? The Gemara explains. Rashi have a mitzvah shekibul aleim b'nei Noach kevin shelo kimu. Now, he saw that the b'nei Noach were given seven mitzvahs. He saw that they didn't accept the seven mitzvahs. Amad v'hitir mamonim liyisrael. And as a punishment for not keeping the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach, so basically he was matir their mamon. So the... And so that is explanation number one. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Mehacha. Rabbi Yochanan gives a, I'd say, similar explanation. Rashi over here explains. Kishesivev, second Rashi on the Amud. Kishesivev v'hichzer haTorah akol haumos v'lo kibluha. We know, the Gemara Avodah Zarah tells us, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu went around from all the nations of the world and peddled the Torah. And he presented the Torah to every one of the nationalities, and they all balked at the idea of accepting of the Torah. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah goes into more detail regarding, each nationality asked about, a sampling of some of the mitzvahs in the Torah. Kadosh Baruch Hu presented a sampling, and they said, "Nah, that's onerous. We're not prepared for that kind of commitment." And so, as a result of the fact that they rejected the Torah, says Rav Yochanan, so therefore, hitir mamonim. So basically, you have two ideas in the Gemara, which are very similar to one another, in terms of basically it's a form of a punishment for either rejecting Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, or rejecting the entire Torah. Tanya Namihachi, the Gemara is going to quote a Braisa, and the Braisa is going to echo the sentiment that was just taught to us by the Amorayim. Shor shel Yisrael shenagar shor shel Kanani patur shor shel Kanani shenagar shor shel Yisrael bein tam bein mor mishalem nezek shalem. So again, the Braisa start here starts off at the same point that we learned in the Mishnah, but the Braisa goes one step further. Our Mishnah gave no explanation. The Braisa does. Shenem ramad v'yamadet eretz rav v'yaser goyim v'omer ofiyam mehar paran. So now the Braisa quotes two psukim. The two psukim that were just quoted by the Amorayim. The pasuk that was quoted by Rabbi Abba and Chavakuk. Excuse me. And the pasuk quoted by Rav Yochanan at the end of Sefer Dvarim. My ve'omer. Now the Gemara wants to know, in the Braisa, why does the Braisa recording two psukim? As far as the Amorayim are concerned, look, each Amorah is presenting their own pasuk. But in one Braisa, why is there a need for two psukim? V'chitem ha'yam aviyam adet eretz mi'bayi l'lechad rav masna u'chid rav Yosef. I might have thought that the first pasuk, the one quoted from Chavakuk, is coming to teach us a different point, which we're going to get to in just a moment. And so, tashma hofiyam mehar paran, miparan hofiyam mamonam li'yisrael. So that's why the Braisa quotes the second pasuk, because you might have thought that the first pasuk is dedicated to teach us another point. My... So now the Gemara says, what are the two other points that I learned from that pasuk from Chavakuk? Amar Rav Masna Amavi Amadid Eretz Rav V'chulei Ma Ra Rasha V'mitzvah Shenisar V'leim B'nei Noach V'lo Kimom. Again, it starts off with the same starting point. Kadosh Baruch Hu saw that the other nations were not keeping the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. Amar V'higla Osamei Al Ad Masna. And so therefore the punishment is galus. They're sent into exile. And what is linguistically the word v'yater? How do we know that's a reference to being sent into exile? When describing the grasshoppers, so the Torah gives a couple of descriptive terms so that we can identify kosher versus non-kosher grasshoppers, and it describes its legs, which are linater. Umitargem lekafta bahon alara. Now, if you look at Targum Onkelos over there on the pasuk, linater means it's there to hop around in order to get around. So you see the word linater means basically to go places. Now, in the context of the Goyim, yes, they're going places, but not good places. In other words, there means exile. Maider of Yosef. Now, there's another point the Gemara says of what we can learn from the pasuk in Chavakuk, and the Gemara is now going to quote it. I'm Rav Yosef. Amavi Yamadet Eretz Rav V'chulei Mara Rasha V'Mister Shekibul Alem B'nei Noach V'lo Kimum. Again, same starting point. Kadosh Baruch Hu saw that the non-Jewish population were not keeping the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. Amavi Tirim Lehem. So he based Kadosh Baruch Hu said, you know what? Okay, no more Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. Meaning, okay, you guys are not keeping it. I'm rescinding the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. To which the Gemara's reaction is startling. It's Guri Atker. So the Gemara says, I understand, what are you doing? You're rewarding them? Meaning, oh, you can't keep the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. Okay, fine. I'll just take them away. Okay. Can't follow the rules? No problem at all. We'll just take away the rules. Gemara says that's literally unbelievable. So imke matzina chote niskar. Gemara says, so you're rewarding them for not complying. So the Gemara says, no. What's meant over here is that even if they end up deciding to do them, they're not going to get the kind of reward that they would have gotten previously. The Gemara says, so the Gemara says, if you have a non-Jew who is involved in Torah, he is like a Kohen Gadol. Discussion in the Gemara over here, is the Gemara talking about Kol HaTorah Kula? Is the Gemara over here talking specifically only about the Torah as it relates to the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach? Either way, there obviously is a very strong value. This is the basic point the Gemara is making. There is a very strong value in a Nachri being involved in Torah. And so, and when I say strong value, meaning the statement to Rav Meir is, Hu Kikohen Gadol. I mean, that's a very strong statement regarding how valuable it is for him to be involved in Torah. So, Tamalam Rashi Yaseh Osam Adam V'Chai Behem. Kohanim V'Levim V'Yim V'Yisrael Lo Nemar Ela Adam. So, and just to make the point, he notes that when the Torah describes that a person learning the Torah, it says Adam. Now, Adam is universal. That refers to every human on this planet. So if you are a Nachri and you're involved in the study of Torah, you are like a Kohen Gadol. So Amre ein mekablam aleim schar ke mitzuva v'oseh. So the Gemara says, look, we're not going to change our basic premise. The premise of Rav Yosef is that they're not going to be rewarded as much as someone who was commanded. It's still valuable. There's still a value in a non-Jew being involved in Torah, keeping the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. It's just simply they're not going to be as rewarded as once previously. Because previously they were commanded, and we know the rule, the Imakam Alem Schar Kim Mitzvah V'yoseh, Alakim Mishen Mitzvah V'yoseh, Damar Rabbi Chanina, the Gemara quotes it, Galam Mitzvah V'yoseh, Yoseh Mim Mishen Mitzvah V'yoseh. They're just simply not going to be as rewarded as somebody who was commanded. Yes. Right. So the simplest way to explain the Gemara over here, even though it's not the simple pshat in the Gemara, but the simplest way to explain it is that when the Gemara here says Torah, it means Torah as it relates to Sheva Mitzvos. Meaning, learn the Gemara in Sanhedrin, right? Daf Nun Zayin Nun Ches. Okay. You know my secret? It's a great trick. How do I know the Sheva Mitzvos B'nai Noach is in Sanhedrin Nun Zayin Nun Ches? Because Nun Ches is Noach. Okay, it's a great little trick. So the Gemara's in Sanhedrin and Zayin Nun Ches, so they're going to learn the Gemara's over there. And according to the Ramban, there's plenty for them to learn, because the Ramban's opinion is that, you know, one of the Sheva Mitzvos B'nai Noach is Dinim, and that's judicial law. And according to the Ramban, the Dinim that they have to subscribe to are our Dinim. So that means then that they have to know the entirety of Choshen Mishpat. Okay, so it'll keep them busy. So basically, the simplest way to explain the Gemara is that they should be involved in Sheva Mitzvos B'nai Noach. Okay, Tana Rabbanan. Ukvar Shalcha Machus Romishnei Sardiotos Etzor Chachmei Yisrael. If you ever wondered, did this ever become like a sticking point between us and them? Meaning this idea that we're learning today, that a Shur Yisrael Shenagach Shur Shanachri, exemption. Shur Kanani Shenagach Shur Yisrael, full obligation. You think historically that ever came up in conversation, so you don't need to wonder, because it's a Gemara that we're about to learn right now. So the Romans sent two officers to Chachmei Yisrael. Ladinu Torah Schem. So the request is, teach us the entire Torah. Imagine. They came to Yeshiva, they want to learn. And Karav Vishan Vishilshu. So they learned it once, they learned it a second time, or learned it a third time. Alternatively, what the Gemara over here means is Karu, they learned Chumash, Shanu, they learned Mishnah, and Shilshu, and then they learned the Torah Shabbat Peh. Now again, right, as Danny pointed out earlier, you shouldn't be teaching Goyim the entirety of the Torah, but I guess over here, extenuating circumstances, they were, you know, the Romans were the Romans were the heads at the time. Anyway, v'shas p'tiras amamr lahem dikdan b'chol taraschem v'emeti. So when they left after having learned kol haTorah kula, I'm curious to know how long it took. But and then when they left after learning kol haTorah kula, so they said to the Chachmei Yisrael, beautiful. Not only beautiful, emes. Everything in the Torah is true. The only inconsistency we found in the entire study of the Torah is this particular halacha. So, chutz midavar zeh, she'atem ha'omrim shor she'yisrael she'nagach shor she'kanani pater, and shor kanani she'nagach shor she'yisrael bein tam bein mu'ad mishlam nezek shalem. Mima nafshach. Now remember now, they're thinking like chachamim. So it's not like they're coming at us just from a very uninformed, it's unfair. That's not their problem. They're now... They are, I don't want to use the word too loosely, but they're talmid chachamim, meaning they're thinking like us who are learning the Gemara. What's bothering them is the inconsistent nature of this halacha. And the only thing that's bothering them is, how did you understand Re'ehu? Is Re'ehu to be taken literally? So then the exemption should work in both directions. And if Re'ehu is not to be taken literally, so then the obligation should apply in both directions. And so, their question is, I don't understand the inconsistent nature of this halacha. And then the Gemara ends this discussion by saying, we heard their question, we acknowledge that was a good question, and we didn't give them the answer. Meaning the answers that we learned earlier this morning. The answers of Rabbi Abahu and Rabbi Yochanan, a punishment for non-compliance with the Sheva Mitzvah of Bnei Noach. So the Gemara says, good, we'll keep that answer in-house. We will not broadcast that answer because obviously it's contentious. What do I do with the recording that I just made now? Okay, no. I assume who my audience is going to be, even on the internet. It's not a big audience anyway, so I don't need to worry. So Rashmo bar Yehuda Shchivale Barta. Okay, the Gemara tells a story. Rashmo bar Yehuda. Now the story is going to go way off on a tangent. It's a story regarding Amorayim, and only at the end of the story do we going to see some connection between the story and our discussion that we're having right now. So, right in your mind, like shift as we are about to start the story. Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda Shifcha Leibarta. Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda unfortunately lost a daughter. Amalei Rabban Ula Kum Nezal Nin Chamei. So the rabbis say to Ula, okay, let's go. Let's Nichum Avelim. It's a tremendous mitzvah. Let's go. Provide words of comfort. Now, just a little bit of background. Ula came from Eretz Yisrael down to Bavel. Now he's not the only one. Rav did this as well, and there were others. But Ula, he had a hard time adjusting to Babylonian life and Babylonian lifestyle. It was just difficult for him. In other words, and now I guess the overarching question of why he made Yerida, if he didn't particularly like Minhagei Bavel, it's kind of those questions which is like, you know, it's a good question, but I'm certainly not going to be able to answer it. Anyway, here's a perfect illustration of Ula not enjoying the Minhagim of Bavel. So they say to Ula, come with us. Let's go provide Nichum Avelim. Kum Nezal Ninchame. Amar Lahu Ma'isech Gabei Nechemta Debavlai. I don't want to be involved in your form of Nechama. Digidifnahu. Digidufahu. You blaspheme God when you provide Nechama. And I don't want to take any part in that. The Amar my Efshalam Aved. Here's a classic line they say in Bava when they do Nicham Avelim. They say, "What could we have done?" Which implies Ha Efshalam Aved Avde, that if there was some way that we could have altered the course of events, we would have done so, and that's blasphemy. Meaning, HaKadosh Baruch Hu obviously decided this to happen. This is all Gzeras HaMelech. This is God's decree. Why would we want to change it? It's sad, it's tragic, but this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu designed. So don't, in other words, you guys say, well, what could we have done? Implying, yeah, we would have changed it. And Ula says, I want no part of that. Azahu l'chudai gabei. Now, Ula goes on his own and does do the mitzvah of Nichum Avelim, but he does it on his own and not with Chachmei Yisrael. Amar lei. And this is now how Ula provides the Nechamta. Now, I'm going to tell you. We're going to go through the Gemara. We're going to see it inside. Generally speaking, I feel like I'm in pretty much in touch with the Gemara, and I know whether the Gemara is literal or a little bit sarcastic. Over here, I'm unsure. I'll let you decide. I have my own feelings about whether the Gemara over here is written intentionally with a drop of irony involved. This is now how Ula is going to provide the Nechama. So Amar Lev Ayomar Hashem Al Titzaras Moav Al Titgarbam Milchama. So Ula now says to Shmuel Bar Yehuda, Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, who just lost a daughter, look, you know, we know the Torah teaches us that we're not allowed to go to war with Moav. Now, so now, why did Hashem have to tell Moshe not to go to war? Like, do you think Moshe is a warmonger? That, like, this is what he wants to go to war. No, he has no interest in going to war. Why do you think Kadosh Baruch Hu had to tell Moshe not to go to war against Moav? Moshe over here used a logical argument. Now, Mijanim came as an accessory to the crime. And yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, go to battle against Mijanim. So now, here it's a very good Kavachoma. Pretty straightforward. If we're going to go to battle against the Mijanim who are an accessory, so Moav were the actual, they were the instigators. They started the war. So the Kav HaChomer is now very good. So Moshe thought, I should go to war against Moav. So Moavim Atzmam Lo Kol Shekein, top of Lamaches Amid Beis. Amar Lo Kadosh Baruch Hu Lo Kishal Al Tal Dati. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, look, logic is wonderful. You're not thinking the way I'm thinking. And therefore, I'm telling you, don't go to war against Moav. Because Shtei Predos Tovos Yesh Lo Hotzim Mehem Rusam Aviyah V'Nam HaHamonis. So now we know that Moav is going to produce the Gemara here talks about two beautiful birds that are coming out of these nationalities. But one's coming out of Moav and the other one's coming out of Amun. So in terms of Moav, one beautiful bird is coming out of there, meaning Rus. And so I do not want you to go to battle against the entire nation because of the one one product that's coming out, Rus HaMoaviyah. So now this is Ula wrapping up his nechama to Rav Shmuel, and he says, look, for an entire nation HaKadosh Baruch Hu was ready to spare because he knows that there was going to be one good product coming out of there. Bito shel Rebbe im kshira hi v'ruya hi latzeis mimenu davar tov al achas kama v'kama dahava haya. And so for your daughter, if anything good would have come out of her, HaKadosh Baruch Hu for sure would have spared her. So need not worry because nothing good was going to come out of her. Now, after having read the story, so I'm wondering, is the Gemara over here now being a little bit ironic in when Ula made the statement, I don't want to be with you, Bavliim, because you don't know how to give Nechama. I, on the other hand, I know how to give Nechama. So I don't know. Is the Gemara stops the discussion over here. Is the Gemara proud of the Nechama that Ula gave? Or is the Gemara kind of like ironically saying, and his Nechama is what it was? Meaning, I don't know. I don't know how to be, you know, I'm going to reserve judgment, especially when it comes to Amarayim, but I don't know how the Gemara feels about this Nechama. And I'm certainly curious to know. And Rashi doesn't, and I haven't seen, huh?
It's an insult.
It's an insult, yeah, to the door, yeah.
But it's consistent that there's a zero and a
power. Right, meaning, yeah, correct. Absolutely agreed. Meaning, Ula's position is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu desired this, and therefore there's a reason why. Now again, he may be right. I'm not sure if I would have shared that information. No, I'll tell you what, I'll be clear about my own. I wouldn't share that information, but again, back then they were a little, you know,
maybe she accomplished the purpose of the world.
Okay, and again, that's great. And I just, the way he presented it seems a little, it seems a little bit harsh. Okay. Amar Rabbi Chia Bar Abba, let's just do a little bit more. Amar Chia Bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kadosh Baruch Hu mekapech schar kol birya, afilu schar seicha na'a. Kadosh Baruch Hu does not cut on any reward that's due to a person. Even small conversation. De'ilu bechira dekamra Moav amalo kash baruch lemosha al teitzar es Moav al titkarbam. Milchama hu delo ha inguri avid behu. Now, when the older daughter of Lot named the child Moav, so that's disdainful, because it's distasteful. Because basically, she's saying, Me'av, it comes from my father. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says regarding Moav, you know what, don't have a battle against Moav, but you could subjugate them. That's fine. But Si'ara, Dekamra, Ben Ami, but the younger daughter, after having relations with her father, and after producing a child with her father, so she names the child Amon, Ben Ami, a nicer name. Right? More tsanua. So Amar Lei Kadosh Baruch Hu LaMoshe, V'kirafta mu b'nei Amon al titzareim v'al titkar bam klal. Da'afila anguri lo te'avid behu. To that, because she spoke nicer and she named the child a nicer name, so Kadosh Baruch Hu says with Amon, not only don't go to war against them, don't subjugate them at all. V'amar Reb Chiya bar Abba Amar Reb Shua ben Karcha lo'olam yaktim adam l'dvar mitzvah. When a person has a mitzvah opportunity, a person should jump at a mitzvah opportunity. Shebeshvul laila acha shekidmasa bechir letzira kidmasa arba doros liYisrael. Over Yishai v'David v'Shlomo. Now the first daughter jumped at the mitzvah opportunity. Now again, just today I have so many unexplained phenomena in today's Gemara. Like, I don't know why the Gemara here refers to it as a mitzvah opportunity. Have relations with one's father in order to procreate. Now, she thought that the world was coming to an end, so in her mind, she was right. Okay. Anyway, but because she had relations first with her father, so therefore the product of the good product that comes out, Ruth, comes out earlier, as opposed to the younger daughter of Ilusira, Ad Rechavam. As opposed to Rechavam, the son of Shlomo, which obviously comes at a later generation. So the reason why, and Rechavam, sorry, is a product of Shlomo and Naama, who comes from Ammon. So that is a result, the reason why that was delayed is because the matriarch, meaning the second daughter of Lot, delayed in doing the mitzvah. Okay, stop here.